Welcome to It's a Good Life, the podcast for entrepreneurs, where it's all about growing yourself and your business. Here's your host, founder of America's largest business coaching company, Brian Buffini.
Well, the top of the morning to you, and welcome to It's a Good Life. Well, I got to tell you, this podcast was destined to happen. Bert Jacobs, we might as well be brothers from different mothers. Similar families, similar backgrounds. And we started a company, The Top Referrals, Work by Referral, Live the Good Life. And in 1994, Bert and his brother John started the famous t-shirt company, Life is Good. What a brand they've built. What a business they built from the streets of Boston. Starting with, you know, the classic 70 bucks in the wallet, all the way to this fabulous company that is there today. And for those of you coming to Mastermind, and I have a special announcement at the end of today's broadcast, and a once ever type message about Mastermind. Bert is going to be giving a keynote address to everyone at Mastermind this year, and we can't wait to have him. Bert, we're excited to see you. We're excited to hear you today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Brian. Thrilled to be here, and can't wait to meet everybody else on your team.
Great stuff. Well, Boston, as they say, is the West Coast capital of Ireland, and you grew up there, and you had five siblings. I know what that's like. Same deal myself, five boys and one girl in my family. And you had what I read is called a free-range childhood. Who and what instilled that, just this whole optimism in your life? You're wearing a shirt today that says Grateful Dude. Where did this spirit of optimism come from?
Well, you know, it's funny. We never really, when we started the t-shirt company, we never thought too much about that. We just sort of made a bunch of mistakes and didn't have a good idea and didn't have a brand. And we were fiddling around for 5 years. And then we landed on Life is Good, and we kind of got lucky, and it really was a great, like, natural connection for us. And we felt like that's a brand we want to get behind. And as the years went on, we realized that it was really our mom who instilled this idea that optimism is really powerful. And she did it over and over. We had a pretty dysfunctional home. Everybody was trying their best, but our dad was heavily depressed when he was a kid, when we were kids growing up. And, you know, he just kind of lost it a bit. I think he had too many kids, not enough money, and he was well-intended, but he just really kind of lost it. And my mother, no matter what was going on, had this ritual at the dinner table where she'd look around the table and say, "Tell me something good that happened today." And that simple prompt just changed the energy in the room. And it worked over and over, and she kind of, you know, bonded us with each other, and we had each other's backs no matter what. And we laughed a lot no matter what was going on. And, you know, even though we had the crazy dysfunctional home, all our friends liked to hang out there because there was always something happening. So, you know, the answer is it was really our mom, Joan Jacobs, that sort of gave us the idea. We didn't know it until later.
And she had a bit of Irish background, I hear.
100%. Yeah, she did.
She sounds like the classic Irish mom to me.
Yeah, great storyteller. And she was really funny and crazy and acted everything out. And she loved music and dance. And that's the thing, is it's funny. Both our parents struggled with depression. But my dad's coping mechanisms were screaming and yelling and drinking too much. And my mom, on the other hand, it was the singing and the storytelling, and she was really transparent. No one talked about depression with my dad, but my mom owned it. She'd talk about it all the time, but then she'd have funny stories. And, you know, she just kind of taught us not to be afraid of having problems and overcome the obstacles by focusing on the opportunities. And she showcased it all the time. So it's real interesting to kind of unravel as an adult and look back, but that was it, you know, that kind of did it.
Well, I knew there was something special. I mean, we don't feature many books on this program, but you and your brother wrote this book, Life is Good, which makes sense that it would be. And of course, it was dedicated to your mom. My first book was dedicated to my mother. And this podcast ends with my mother giving an Irish blessing. And, you know, like I said, it sounds like we almost brothers from different mothers, you know. I love the opening introduction to the book. You say, life is not easy. Life is not perfect, but life is good. Like, that is the mindset to me of what makes for a good life. Life isn't easy, so the expectations are proper. You know what I mean? That life is not perfect. That doesn't everything go well in your day, But ultimately, life is good. And as you think about optimism, how would you define optimism, Barry? Because you're kind of carrying the flag now for your mom, you and your brother.
Well, you know, like most things, I think there's different types of optimism. So we embrace what we call rational optimism. Rational optimism acknowledges that there's challenges in the world, and you're never going to stop them. We're going to face really difficult things and little bumps along the way. Everyone's going to, you know. Whereas, you know, you have these kind of pie in the sky optimism where everything's going to be perfect. You're going to get hurt if you think everything's going to be perfect. It's not. There's going to be good and bad. It's more back to that idea of optimism being a powerful coping mechanism. It allows us to choose every day what we put our energy and our limited resources into. Are we going to focus on the obstacles, or are we going to just acknowledge them and then pour our limited time and resources into the opportunities? That's the simple trick. So what we teach each other all the time in our community through Life is Good, which, as you point out, has a lot of similarities to your community. We're sharing the same people, I think. It's the idea that when you wake up in the morning, you're going to sit on the edge of that bed for a couple of seconds or a minute or two. Are you going to just dwell on what your weaknesses and your shortcomings and the things you're afraid of? Or are you going to give a little bit of time to that and then say, okay, who can I gravitate to in my life who's also a rational optimist, who focuses on my strengths, who I really like being around, I thrive with? What are my strengths and how do I lean into those today and be my best? And we simply believe, is short answer to your question, is optimism is the most pragmatic strategy for living a happy and fulfilling life. It is really a strategy. It's not some idea that happiness comes every day easily. You know, another thing we always like to point out to people is if you show somebody shooting foul shots, okay, and they hit 90 foul shots in a row, a lot of people would look and say, well, that guy's a great foul shooter. The smarter thing to say is that guy has practiced foul shooting a lot. And rational optimism is no different. It's a great strategy, but you have to practice it every day. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make your life perfect. It's a great mechanism and tool for happiness.
So it's a choice and it's a strategy.
It's a choice.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. And I love that it's rational, right? Because we know that the positive people get ridiculed, right? So we have Saturday Night Live. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. And that's the dope. But the guy, you know, Simon Cowell on the talent show, who's the gruff and the grimp and you're terrible and you're lousy, he's revered. I feel like it takes more intestinal fortitude and more courage to be positive, because it's easy to be negative because everybody's there. And you look at the world we live in today where everything's hyper-politicized. Negativity is everywhere. I actually feel like your message is at the beginning of what's so desperately needed now, and the brand, what you're doing.
Thank you. I think we're both focused on the right thing, and you're right. It's not clearly understood out there. What I like to do, rather than kind of jumping down someone's throat and forcing optimism on them, I think it's a good idea to challenge people. We all agree that from a standpoint of behavioral science, the best predictors of future behavior are past behavior, okay? And if we look through history, it's wonderful to challenge people to show us the long list of great pessimists. Show us. We'll be waiting. You and I can wait months and months for one person. But if you asked who are the great optimists in history, the list will go on and on. You know, Martin Luther King didn't say, I have a nightmare. He said, I have a dream. And it's usually people who, especially in dark times, in difficult times, are able to envision something and articulate something and have enough imagination for something beautiful on the horizon. And that's, you know, the other thing that comes into the debate of pessimism and optimism is realism. And our take at Life is Good is simple on that. Pessimism is corrosive, and most people would agree, to a group or an individual. And realism is better, okay? But realism lacks imagination. Realism needs hard data. Realism does not see something beautiful on the horizon and therefore inspire and unite people around it. You need optimism for that. So to us, the choice for strategy is a no-brainer.
Well, I certainly have never launched any of my great initiatives from the CFO office.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. And one of the reasons I love what you're doing, Bert, and I love your message.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to say it's like self-aggrandizing myself, but we love people here who've been there, done that. There's a gazillion people with books. There's a lot of people even talk about optimism. But you've done it. You've been there. You built this business from this philosophy. It's hugely successful. It's this best in brand. And now you talk on that basis. You stand on that success. Like, you've been there, done that. You built this, you know, huge company doing it. You're going to think I'm winding you up here. When I came to America, I emigrated with $92 in my wallet. I started selling t-shirts off a cart at the beach in San Diego. So I came to America. I was a t-shirt seller. Tell me how you and your brother ended up in the t-shirt business.
So it's really simple. I mean, everything about my brother and I, we're actually not particularly extraordinary people. We're really ordinary people. And I think that we wanted to get, one of the things our mother did when we were younger was taught us how to draw. She was a great artist. And she taught us how to draw, and she taught us that, you know, your imagination can take you anywhere and we could create our own entertainment. And so that was really kind of powerful skill we learned when we were young. And when we got older and everybody was figuring out their career, we weren't gravitating towards the idea of getting a job at a big company, and we wanted to do something with artwork. But we were intimidated by the world of fine art and art galleries. It really feels quite exclusive. And t-shirts, believe it or not, just struck us as this very accessible art, something that we could kind of be for anybody and everybody. And as it turns out, it's an incredible mechanism or vehicle for communication. So Life is Good really ends up being much more of a communications company than a fashion company or a retail company. And the thing about like building this big business, you know, we started with nothing. It's about $150 million business a year. We didn't really build it. We really didn't. And I'm not being humble. It's people helped us. And that's the idea of optimism being powerful, is like, it's kind of, Life is Good is a classic story of how the message, Life is Good, and embracing those three simple words is a self-fulfilling prophecy. We kept moving towards this good life by talking about it and talking to others about it. And then others would say, oh, I like these guys. I want to help them. And a lot of people are a lot smarter and faster and stronger than we are, and they've helped us. And when we look around Life is Good today, trust me, we're not on the top of list for anything around here other than we're part of the team and we started things. But now we've got, you know, great people doing things. And really, after 30 years, this is our 30th anniversary, we're just getting warmed up. And we don't want to stop. We don't want to sell it or go public because it's so much fun. It's really become a part of our life and who we are. And it's really been a fun journey.
We have hundreds of thousands of people listening to us right now that are entrepreneurs. Some of them are just getting the ball rolling. And they hear, God, $150 million business, and he's having fun and drawing things. Take us back to the early days and the struggle. How'd you get the plane off the ground? Because that's always, it seems to be the first phase is, how do we get the plane off the ground? And then how do I get it to the glide altitude, you know?
I mean, it was the most basic thing in the world. I don't know if I would tell someone to do what we did, but I think the one thing that we did, I like that Brené Brown has this expression, operate with a bias for action. I like that a lot. We've met Brené, and we just think she's a really wonderful person, great leader, obviously a great speaker. And, you know, I think we did that. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't have things figured out, but we didn't sit around and have focus groups for 6 months or 6 years. We just got in the street. We drew some things. We didn't have our own label or t-shirt. We went and bought a Fruit of the Loom or a Hanes t-shirt. We took it to a local screen printer. We didn't have any of our own operations, none of that. We were working out of our van for 5 years and then an apartment in Boston. And we were selling t-shirts in the street. And that's all it was. It was just testing. But we were talking to people in the street every day. and then later on college campuses every day. So for all the failing we did in those 5.5 years in the beginning, we learned a lot and we focused on the idea, just what you said earlier, that we're at this point where so many people could use more optimism. And in particular, we focused on the idea that the mass media and the 6 o'clock news really just reinforces what's wrong with humanity and what's wrong with the world every day, and does the opposite of what our mom did at the dinner table. So that was kind of it. And then one day we make a Life is Good t-shirt. We actually threw a keg party and we had our friends over, and we hadn't even made the Life is Good t-shirt. It was one of 30 drawings on our walls. And a girl that came to the party circled the character Jake, the smiley character, and she put an arrow and she said, "This guy's got life figured out." So in the morning when we woke up, we distilled that into the three words, "Life is good." And we got out in the street. We sold 48 t-shirts in 45 minutes. And it was the first really like great seller we ever had. And all we've been doing the same thing for 30 years. Everyone else has helped us kind of figure out how to grow the business.
Yeah, you get feedback, you find out what works, and then you get people. How many people are in the company today?
We're about 325.
So similar to ourselves, crazy. We're living similar lives here, but it's a fantastic thing. It's crazy. So talk about the process of going from A to B. I know I've had my own journey in that, where I was the t-shirt seller, and then I was the realtor. And then I'm the realtor running the coaching company.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I had to learn a lot along the way.
Yeah.
And had to kind of grow through. I was like, who am I? I grew up in a tiny house with, you know, I don't know any of this stuff. I'm sure you had to face all that. How did you grow to become the leaders you are today?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So we started in 94. Between 94 and the year 2000, those first 6 years, it was the first time we were selling only one type of shirt, Life is Good. And it took us those 6 years to grow from nothing to $3 million in sales annually. And then somebody knocked on our door and they wanted to buy the brand. And we were flattered, but not interested. And then we went back to them and said, because they had a big t-shirt operation and we didn't really still know what we were doing. And we said, what if you licensed it? And my brother and I continued to design the shirts, but you use your sales force and, you know, the operation you have and all that. So they did that. It was a company called The Shirt Factory.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And we're in Boston. And The Shirt Factory licensed it. And so between, and then we took off with them. Between 2000 and 2004, we grew to 40 million. Now, at 40 million, you'd think we were crazy to want to get out of that deal. But between those years, we had developed this focus on helping kids, too. And this idea that one out of every $10 in profit we make will go to kids who really need it. And that happened because little kids wrote us letters and they were the most moving. Everybody wrote us letters, but little kids facing real challenges wrote us letters. And it kind of broke our hearts and warmed our hearts. And we started kind of sending money to different charities that were helping kids that face challenges, kids that face poverty and violence and life-threatening illnesses and things like that. And then we met back up with a friend of ours who had been doing social work, and we partnered and kind of brought them in, and it became an integration of social work and for-profit. Now back to this licensee, they weren't so interested in that part of it. And so we decided to buy our way out of the license, but in the process, we bought that company. So it was kind of a crazy thing because we borrowed. Now we were both, you know, we were doing pretty well. We had bought homes in a nice neighborhood in downtown Boston, and it seemed like we were about to be the dumbest people on the planet because we borrowed $26.5 million, $16.5 million to buy the company and the license, and another $10 million for inventory, when in our old model, we didn't own anything. We just got a big royalty check. So we really looked stupid. But it worked out because now between 2004, we bought it in 2005, okay? In the next 3 years, we grew the business to $117 million. And so it just, we inherited all these wonderful people. Now we had a great operation. John and I could still focus on creative things. And, you know, we've been hiring great people since. We've had our ups and downs, but we're in a really great place. And most of the years have been great growth. We've been through so much, including this crazy pandemic recently. And I think we've found that we just need to be really transparent with our community. We need to make T-shirts about what's happening in the world. Of course, we need to keep up with whatever it is going on out there. But the thing that, including technology, you know, business has changed. But the thing we don't change is our values. And you mentioned things like gratitude. We didn't invent these values. We have 10 of them. All the marketers tell you, you can only have three. we were, you know, didn't know that. So we chose 10. And there are things that have been around forever.
The 10 chapters in the book.
Like, yeah, simplicity and love and gratitude and creativity. You know, these are, and courage. And these are the things that came in the letters from the kids, you know. So it's kind of all fallen in our lap and kind of been a natural path. And if you ask me where we're going next, I don't know, except that I don't think that life is good. You know, you've made a couple of jokes that and I like them and I agree with them about Ireland, about Boston being the East Coast Ireland and you're in the West Coast Ireland or whatever, you know. I think what you're teaching and learning and what we're teaching and learning isn't an American message or idea. It's a human message. So we want to do this in Ireland. We want to do it in Asia. We want to do it in Central and South America. We want to do it all over the world. That's kind of our dream. And we want to bring the Playmaker Project, which is our nonprofit, with us.
I want you to talk about the Playmaker Project for a second. First of all, I love it. You know, given a tenth, there's great history and ancient tradition behind that, which I'm a believer in. But you start this, you had your convictions, you had your gifts, which was the creativity. You got the thing going, you listened to your customers, you built something they wanted, then you licensed it, you got your feet on the ground, you got things going, and then you didn't get comfortable. You bet on yourself to go get the loan and then go take on, and I'm sure it forced you to grow. And then all along the way, staying true to yourself. And I love the Good Playmaker Project. I'd love to spend a couple of minutes on it. And again, I know why you do it and how you do it, but I'd love to, for the folks to hear it.
First of all, I like your summary because it makes me and my brother seem really smart. I think everybody here knows otherwise. Yeah, so the Playmaker Project, it began by a friend, a guy named Steve Gross. And he, while we were stumbling along trying to figure out the T-shirt business, he was out in the streets trying to figure out how to help kids, and he didn't quite know how to do it. And he started working directly with the kids. What he learned before we teamed up with him was that he could really scale things if he worked with childcare providers, people who are already out there in the field working in homeless shelters, foster care centers, oncology departments. They're already there, but nobody's got their back. They don't get paid enough. They don't get trained as well as they should. They're all heart, and there are plenty of the right spirit here and the brains up here, but there's not enough help with them. So what our organization, the Life is Good Playmaker Project, so in sports, you know that a playmaker is the one when the time is winding down, you want to have the ball. That's who they are, you know, and it's appropriate too that you've highlighted that your mother was a great inspiration and our mother was a great inspiration, okay? There's no more important job on planet Earth than the job of a mother, okay? Because if the youngest people on this planet can grow up with resilience and the right values, then our world's going to be okay. And if it goes in the other direction, our world's not going to be okay, okay? So you could argue that the most important job is who's ever taking care of those children. Yet what do? We pay them peanuts. We pay a fortune to half the people that are ruining the world. And we pay next to nothing to the people who are really taking care of our future. So it's the Playmaker Project is our way of supporting them. We have training programs for them. We send them product. We teach them new games for the children. And we learn from them. They co-author the story with us. So it's a network of people that's growing. We're helping over 1 million children these days, and we're on our way to 10 million global, all of that. And it's really, really fun. I would actually go so far as to say that the nonprofit work at Life is Good is in more demand than the for-profit work. And the for-profit work, thankfully, is in great demand, and we're very profitable, and we have a healthy, healthy business, but we really have to figure out how to support this work. And we're learning how to do that because they can gobble up and use more money for great reasons, you know? So if we can give them $1,000, they'll utilize it in amazing ways. And you know, one last thing I want to highlight is, while we continue to grow our business and we have that 10% for kids, which all of our customers know now, and they comment on it when they buy a hoodie or a hat or a t-shirt, I really love that we're helping kids, and our employees love that. Our customers have begun to nearly match what we do. So we give the 10%, but when they're checking out on e-commerce, they can add a $2 or whatever, 50 cents or whatever they want to do. And that adds up to millions and millions of dollars, and it's growing like a weed. So it's once again, it's that self-fulfilling prophecy. It, you know, if you build it, they will come, kind of thing from Field of Dreams.
Well, I'll say this, you know, Bert, one of the great blessings of the work I get to do today is I'm trying to find people to bless our audience and inspire them and help them as they're going through all the ups and downs of trying to run a business. But then there's days like this where I get to be blessed myself. And this has been nothing but a joy talking to you today. I can't wait to meet you in person, hug your neck, and expose you to the best audience. I know you've done a lot of speaking. I'm just putting this group up with anyone. You are going to have a fabulous experience in San Diego at our mastermind. And we're just real thankful to have you. I love what you guys are doing. And I love the Good Playmaker Project. And people can find that on your website. I do have five little rapid-fire questions that I do for everyone we've had on.
Great.
And I just want to kind of fire them at you, see what you think, and give us a little insight into Bert Jacobs. So number one, what's the single best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Single best piece of advice. Know who you are and act like it.
Was that your mom?
No, some guy at a trade show. He laughed at us because my brother and I made a stupid mistake, and we were so young and everybody thought it wasn't our company. So we wore suits.
Yeah.
It's so embarrassing to say.
Okay.
And the guy gave us a big t-shirt order. He was actually from Southern California from a surf shop. And as he was leaving the booth, very cool guy, he looked at us and said, "What's with the suits?" And my brother explained that everyone kept thinking we were like not the owners of the business. So we put suits on and he said that to us. And we ripped those suits off and we've never put them on again.
Brilliant. What a great piece of advice. You're good at listening. I see that. What one talent or gift do you wish you possessed that you currently don't?
Play guitar.
Uh-huh. It's always some kind of performance with music.
Yeah, and the pathetic thing is I have this incredible, we have a partnership at Life is Good with Martin Guitar, and I have this beautiful acoustic guitar in my living room, and my friends come over and play it all the time, so I love having it there. I'm supposed to be like, you know, not afraid of anything. I'm scared to death to pick the thing up.
What book has been most instrumental in your life?
You know, with Life is Good, believe it or not, it was, even as adults, it was Dr. Seuss, the collection of Dr. Seuss.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it was like the simplicity, the childlike simplicity, but the wonderful messages behind it. I found the book Sapiens, recently written, really fascinating. I don't know. I'm a geek. I read a lot of things, but I think that in the last 10 years, that's blown my mind. But over our lifetime, I think Seuss was the most influential.
And you know, he was a San Diego man. And actually done seminars where I've built an entire curriculum around his work. So.
Yeah. And just so you know, he's originally from Springfield, Massachusetts.
Of course he is. See, that's how, then now you know how Irish we all are, because we, anything good, we claim them and stake them down.
That's right. That's right. I love that. What is the quote about, victory has 1,000 fathers,
yep.
and failure is an orphan.
Is an orphan. John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
What movie do you watch over and over? If you're ever scrolling through, the movie's on, and you always stop and check it out. What's the one that gets you?
Probably Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, being a Boston guy, you know, why not?
How do you like them apples?
I like them apples, yeah. Perfect. The best thing I liked about those guys when they came up, and it goes back to the mother thing, No one in Hollywood, I think, had ever done this, but they win the Oscar out of nowhere. It's like Cinderella's story and they're young and it's like, oh my God, these guys are going to be at the Oscars. And then they win it.
Yeah.
And they brought their mothers as dates. Yeah. I thought that was like, that won them their whole, the admiration of everyone, and their careers took off because they did something tasteful, you know?
You got to love it. You got to love it. So this last question I've asked to hundreds of people, business billionaires, famous actors, sports stars, we've had them all, but I don't know that there's anyone more qualified to answer this question than is the last question on every podcast we do. And that is, what does the good life mean to you, Bert Jacobs?
Yeah, to me, the good life is not about what you have in possessions or where you are geographically. It's more the acknowledgement that life, while it's a mystery, is a great gift. And we don't understand it all. We're not the top of the food chain, no matter what your beliefs are. All you have to do is look up and see that something's more sophisticated than us. Although we don't understand it all, it makes a lot of sense to be good to each other and enjoy the ride.
Well, that's spectacular. I hope that whets your whistle to go and get this book, Life is Good. I hope you're as excited as I am to come see Bert in person, along with an all-star cast. We have a line for this year's Mastermind. He's a joy. His business is a blessing. And this last half hour has been a joy to me. And Bert, when we finish every podcast, we finish with a little Irish blessing from my mom. And I'm sure she's not too far off sounding like your Joan. So thanks for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Beautiful. We'll see you soon, Brian. I can't wait to meet everybody at Buffini & Company.
It'll be great. And here's Therese Buffini.
May the road rise up to meet you, and may the wind always be at your back. May the rain fall soft upon your fields, and the sun shine warm upon your face. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the hollow of his hand. See you next time.